You'll say, I know all the guidelines, but we've done an audit from the sidelines, and we know you're all just wrong. You'll say, asthma's really easy, give salbutamol for wheezing, but we say you just don't know. 'Cause if I said, what about...
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is November 7th, 2013, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne.
Get a flu shot. I'm Bat Talk.
The title of today's podcast is Breakfast at Glenfield's: Asthma, Social Media, and Knowledge Translation. Again, this week I have a guest skeptic. His name is Dr. Tapas Mukherjee. Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, Tapas.
Thank you very much, Will. Thank you. You said it amazingly well.
Oh, you're very, very kind. Now, people may recognize a different accent than I have, eh? And so why don't you tell us a little bit about more about you?
Okay, so I'm sitting in a little town called Leicester, which is in the middle of England, UK, and I work as a hospital doctor in respiratory medicine in a hospital called Glenfield, which is one of the largest respiratory teaching units in the United Kingdom.
Tapas, I've had some critics over the last year, and you know who you are. Some of the constructive criticism has been, how do you know what you're doing works? Fair question. This is a skeptical podcast, and we should always be able to turn the critical eye on ourselves. For a while, my answer to the critics has been, well, I know it doesn't work. The traditional model of textbooks, guidelines, journals, and conferences take too long. One definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. But now I have proof of social media's impact on knowledge translation.
Absolutely.
Now, you're this talented, enthusiastic, innovative doctor from the UK, and I love the accent. I mean, this is podcasting. We've had American accents, we've had Canadians, eh? And we've even had some people from Sweden on here. The last time we had a truly British accent was when we did a pubcast in Oxford, England. So it's great to have a British accent on the show again. So to pass, last year you created a YouTube video that went not fungal, not bacterial, but it went viral. And it was called Breakfast at Glenfield's. And the project used that 1995 pop song, Breakfast at Tiffany's, by Deep Blue Something, to discuss asthma management. I just thought of that. Wow, the name of the band was Deep Blue Something. Did that have anything to do with cyanosis and asthma?
No, we didn't think that far ahead, actually. We obviously needed you as our thinking man back then.
Well, when I was putting this together, I looked at that and said, wow, yeah, Deep Blue, cyanotic, status asthmaticus, this may work. Okay, so I was hoping that you could walk us through this project that you had, which was really, in my opinion, a proof of concept called Breakfast at Glenfield's. And if you could walk us through that and tell us how it came to be and what happened. So first of all, what was the problem that you were trying to address with this social media project?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for that brilliant introduction as well, Will. Well, I think the problem in the NHS, or maybe in hospital medicine around the world, is if you were to ask any doctor what's an important discovery in history, for example, they would probably be able to tell you about something like the discovery of penicillin. But I bet much less, not very many doctors would be able to tell you about something else, which I think is even more important nowadays, which is, for example, when was the first computer made, or when was the first mobile phone made? Or even when did the internet get created? And it happens that these things were created 30 or 40 years ago. I mean, the internet took off in 1989. And then since then, we had amazing websites like Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, which allowed us to share masses of information And by 2007, we of course had things like the iPhone, which meant we had enormous power in our pocket, and we no longer needed to carry around devices such as mobile phones, laptops, cameras, microphones. We had everything in one beautiful device.
Do you remember those lab coats that people used to wear with the huge pockets just so they could carry around that knowledge database with them?
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem was that when I became a registrar, which is quite a senior grade in the UK, back in 2008, we were still pretty much in that era where mobile phones were still not allowed in hospital wards. And using things like Facebook and Twitter in hospital is unheard of. It's still not encouraged in most hospitals that I've ever worked in. And that was the problem that we faced, that the so-called modern hospital worker was still limited to using older technology. And within this, we also had not much cash, no money for teaching and limited time. And getting everybody together to sit down in a sort of old lecture-based format is just not practical. And that's exactly the problem we had when we did an audit of asthma guideline use at our hospital.
So you had these outmoded methods or traditional methods of communication, and in healthcare you had limited finances. What a surprise! And so you said you started doing this audit, and what was the audit focused on?
Yeah, so what we did is we did an audit of 58 members of staff across the University Hospitals of Leicester, and we found that only 62% of them were even aware that we had any asthma guidelines at all, and of that, less than half used the guidelines.
Nice. So you had like two-thirds of your staff going, we have guidelines? There's guidelines for this?
Bearing in mind, this is a respiratory hospital. So that was one of the most embarrassing findings of this audit. And in fact, when we asked them knowledge-based questions, whilst staff were quite good at knowing how to prescribe steroids or what dose to use, much less knew what oxygen saturation target to aim for, or things like when to request a chest x-ray in an acutely unwell asthmatic patient. The answers for this were terrible. I mean, in certain cases, the answers were 75% incorrect. Like we were hitting only 25% correct. That was amazing.
You know, we're being a bit cheeky here about this, but do you think that this was just an isolated problem to your institution, or do you think we're talking about a bigger problem of people being aware and physicians being aware of certain either guidelines or best practices?
Well, I think we're talking about the frontline junior doctors, and these doctors rotate around the UK, and it's part of their training to rotate in the region and rotate around the UK. And so I think this is very typical of the problem across the nation, not just in Leicester. Say what you will about Leicester, and I'm sure it attracts some very special, shall we say, people from time to time, but it certainly is a widespread problem. And so what we did about that was that we just did some very basic things. We looked into, for example, what were the actual asthma guidelines like? And believe it or not, when you typed in the word asthma or guideline into our trust website, it didn't come up with the guidelines. And so we made some very, very basic changes, like using keywords that actually worked for finding the guidelines. We also made the actual guidelines more user-friendly and easy on the eye, and they went through some basic tips on how to take a history, how to assess, how to manage a patient who had moderate, severe, or life-threatening asthma. We also had a couple of things which were unique for our trust. What we found in our audit, for example, was that people were very unclear about how to safely discharge and the doses of drugs that they weren't sure on. So we put all of that on our guidelines. But had we then just left it at that stage, I think everything we had done would have been wasted effort. Because as you well know, the phrase that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And I think generations of doctors and nurses before me had done the same audit and put new guidelines up, and then maybe just emailed it to a few people or used posters. And the thing is, posters and emails are, you know, technology which is now 30 years old, and posters are hundreds of years old, and it just doesn't seem to work. The message doesn't go across to the actual people who this is aimed at. And so what we did that was a little bit different is we converted those guidelines into lyrics over the song Breakfast at Tiffany's.
So that was your solution. That was your answer to a the problem that you had was, you know, these guidelines existed. People didn't know them or were aware of them. They weren't following them, at least when you did the audit. And then you said, listen, where did that inspiration come from? Let's put it to a song. Let's put it to Breakfast at Tiffany's. Let's write some lyrics. Where did that grain, that inspiration, where did that light bulb come from?
Well, I guess the light bulb came from the sort of restraints or the constraints of the system we were working in, because it had to be a different type of solution, different from face-to-face shouting or different from email and posters. It had to be something that was probably a little bit left field and hadn't been tried before to get people's attention. At the same time, it had to ideally be educationally sound, but entertaining, so that it would help people learn and they'd want to sit up and learn it. It wasn't just seen to be boring guidelines. But on top of all of this, it was really important that we did the whole thing with no money, because we had been told there was no money. And this is where we thought social media would be the perfect way of spreading information quickly, because everybody owns a mobile phone. And so if we could get a message that people were willing to share and wanted to share with their friends, colleagues, maybe even family, patients with asthma and so on, then they would actually start to do our work for us by you know, being the people in the front line on the shop floor, showing their colleagues about the new asthma guidelines. And so this is where the idea came from, that we're using social media every day, and we're always sharing clips of YouTube, and we're always going on Facebook and telling people about things we've seen that we think are exciting. So the answer was, why don't we make our guidelines more exciting? And that's what we hopefully achieved, I think.
Isn't that interesting, though? The lack of money, the lack of financing, the budget of my favorite budget, $0, or at least my favorite cost, $0, which fits well with the FOAM that we're doing, the Free Open Access to Medical Education. It was that necessity that was the mother of invention, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
exactly. Sparked it. It's like, well, we don't have any money. What can we use then? And so you had to think, well, I guess we're going to have to use what's in our hand or what's in our pocket. And that turned out to be the cell phone or the smartphone.
And I obviously have placed a lot of emphasis on the cell phone. But actually, I think we take for granted the vast resources we have in our daily lives now. So yes, we converted it to lyrics for the song. We recorded it using a mobile phone in a little field outside my house, and we made a mock ward during our lunch breaks where we filmed these sort of patient setting scenes. But we also then edited the video using just free software on our own home PC, and we put the whole thing together using, again, free audio software, and then uploaded it to YouTube. The whole thing, from start to finish, took less than a week. The sort of paperwork and trying to do it legally and trying to do it through the hospital then took the next 2 months. And in the end, we ignored all the advice from the hospital not to release the video and went ahead anyway. And I think that was the right decision. But I think if we'd actually done it the way we were meant to do it, the traditional ways, and getting it checked and getting it approved, I think we'd still be looking at that process now. We probably still would have not released the new guidelines the way we did.
Well, when it's the right thing to do, you just do it, don't you?
Yeah,
so what
absolutely.
What was the reaction? What kind of reaction did you get, locally and beyond locally, to this viral video, this YouTube video that spread through Facebook, Twitter, and social media sites?
Yeah, well, I kind of hoped that it would spread to the people in Leicester, at least the doctors in Leicester. But it was interesting. Within a few hours of it being released, we have this website in the UK called doctors.net.uk. It's like a forum where doctors can log on and discuss things that are relevant to medicine. And they have what they call top quality postings. And this automatically was shared so many times that it became the top quality posting, not just for that day, but for the rest of that month, within 2 or 3 hours. It was shared on, like you say, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. It was even mentioned by the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence on their Twitter page. I think we caught a break when the BBC News got in touch, and we were featured on their local news.
Well, you won an award for it, didn't you? Didn't you win an innovation award because of this?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Yeah, we actually... Yeah,
it's okay. I'll blow your horn for you. You won an award. I've got an award-winning person on this podcast.
We presented it at the British Thoracic Society in summer last year, in June or July. And we won the Innovation in Education Prize for Respiratory Medicine. And this year it won something called the Network Casebook 2 prize, which was presented by Bruce Keogh, who is the director of the NHS for the UK. And since then, we've actually presented it internationally, which is why I think news of this has spread as far as yourselves in Canada and other places around the world, when we presented it at the European Respiratory Society in Barcelona earlier this year. And so it's gone from what should have been a small project based on one department in the UK to something that has been reported quite widely around the world. And so the reaction has been fantastic.
You hit it out of the park. I mean, I looked to the website today on YouTube, and you've got more than 63,000 views for a video on asthma guidelines. Like, really, asthma guidelines, 63,000 views. You hit it out of the park. Well, we are an evidence-based medicine podcast as well, so I also want to talk about the evidence, because you re-audited your staff to find out, did it work? So what were the results, Tapas?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons why I re-audited was because I felt like it was working. It felt like there must be something good coming out of this, not just media attention and not just the sort of anecdotal people chatting, saying this is a really exciting thing that's happening. I mean, that month when we won the award, patients were recognizing me in corridors and people around the country were giving me a ring and emails and so on. But the real question was, had it made any difference? Because there were skeptics in my hospital, in my own department. There were people who were really giving me quite a hard time, actually, saying that we think what you've done is nothing more than a little bit of a game, and you've probably embarrassed yourself. So I had to somehow find some proof, even for myself, to see if this had worked. So yeah, we re-audited it, and we sent the same questionnaire out to 55 members of staff, of which 43 were doctors, which compared statistically no difference from the group that we had audited prior to the intervention. And we analyzed our results with Fisher's exact test, and we found every single point that we had measured before and after had changed statistically, whereas we had had around 60% of staff aware of the guidelines beforehand. We now had 100% of staff aware that there were new guidelines. There had been 45% use, I think, of the guidance before, and now there was 80% saying that they were using the guidelines.
You can't get better than 100%. I mean, really, like, what are you trying to achieve here, Tapas? I mean, more than 100%? I mean, it's like your O2 set. It only goes to 100, and you nailed it at 100%, at least with regards to awareness.
Yeah, with regards to awareness. And I mean, even use was statistically improved. And every one of those knowledge-based questions, chest x-ray indications, steroids, safely discharging, nebulizer use, target saturation, each one had improved significantly. We couldn't have done that without harnessing the power of social media.
Well, we are a critical podcast, right? You know, skeptical, critical podcast. And I mean, you can tell I'm enthusiastic about this. I've got some data now that I can respond to some of the critics who are out there saying, does this social media stuff work for knowledge translation? And you've provided me that research project, but we still need to be critical of it. So some of the limitations, yeah, it was a small sample size. You've got, you know, about 50 or so healthcare professionals completing this audit, and it is only one study. Did you consider doing a repeat audit at 3, 6, 12 months to see if that knowledge stuck?
I did. One of the things that this wasn't set up to do was be repeated, because I think one of those it's exactly the point that I was going to make, actually. After this video came out and after we did the re-audit, I was actually posted to a different region. So I never worked again at Glenfield for the following year. So the staff all changed. This project very much went off to one side. I've now returned to Glenfield, and there's a lot of talk of, you know, should we do another project? Should we have a bigger population size? Should we make it part of the junior doctor induction so that every 4 months when people change, we can show them, you know, the new video and they can learn a whole set of guidelines in 3 or 4 minutes.
But only if you're getting royalties.
Yeah, only if I'm getting royalties. But like I say, I need you on my side. I need you to be my my PR man, actually. You have all these good ideas. Yeah, the problem was that I didn't know at that point that this was going to be as big as it was. And so had I known that, I probably would have pushed and said, come on, let's get like 200 people. But we did get, at least we got about 50 people, which is, although it's small, it was enough to make some statistical sort of comparisons before and after. So I have no doubt if we had managed to audit 200 people, 300 people, we still would have found the same improvements before and after. Yeah, we didn't do that. Maybe next time.
So one of the other limits I thought to pass in evaluating the project, and it is a fabulous project that you did, was that there weren't patient-oriented outcomes, and we're always looking for those patient-oriented outcomes, not necessarily surrogate markers. So yes, 100% of your staff was aware of the guidelines, and they were in concordance with the guidelines, but did that translate into lower morbidity or mortality? And I understand that this wasn't set up to do that, but that would be one of the things that I would suggest if you were going to do another project, also look at that patient, because that's the most important person in this whole sort of scenario, is that we want to make sure our asthma patients are doing better because of this intervention.
Yes, and I think that's absolutely right. And the other thing is that one of the questions we had, because we just made these questions up on the back of an envelope. We didn't think through them. If we knew what we knew now, we probably would have had some better way of knowing, instead of that question, do you follow the guidelines? Having it sort of proved to us that you know the guidelines. We did have some knowledge-based questions in there. We had some management questions in there, and they were all improved. But that statistic of 45% using the guidelines up to 80% using the guidelines, what does that mean? Does it actually mean that they're therefore treating the patients better? We have no way of knowing that, unfortunately. We only have these sort of surrogates, like you say.
But science is baby steps, and it can be incremental. And it can sort of take leaps forward. I think you took a leap forward, and now you need to do some incremental stuff with regards to a formalized, validated survey tool about knowledge translation, and then look at maybe at patient-oriented outcomes. So not only the provider, but the user, yeah, the person at the receiving end of these asthma treatments, that they are getting improved care.
Yeah, I mean, this was a huge learning experience for me as well. And I think that is exactly right, that you would have to prove somehow that not only does this get people's motivation up or interest levels up or awareness up, but it actually means a sort of a meaningful difference to the patient, because otherwise it's still a wasted effort. And so whilst I still do believe that this is a good way of spreading information and ultimately that will mean better care, I haven't proven that. And if I was to do this again, like you say, I would get those sort of important questions in there so that we can measure that difference.
And there's only one last thing I'd like to mention with regards to limitations. At no point in this podcast did I really talk about what the asthma guidelines were, because that wasn't the focus. The focus was the tool, the method, the fact that you were using social media for knowledge translation and to shorten that KT window. But you also have to use that tool appropriately. So what happens if the guidelines aren't very good? Because we do know that there is variability when it comes to guidelines and the evidence that the guidelines are based upon. So what would happen if this method was used to improve the adherence to weak, poor, or controversial evidence? Let's say, like, I'm just, spitballing here. TPA and acute stroke. Oh, sorry, that's a whole nother podcast. But that was you've got to look at, we're using a tool to translate knowledge. We want to make sure that we have really good knowledge to translate as well. So yeah, make sure that the guidelines or whatever knowledge that you're doing has been vetted, so you've got high quality, clinically relevant, patient-oriented, evidence-based guidelines.
Yeah, but then I think one of the reasons probably why this video is more successful than many other videos about asthma is because this is based on the British Thoracic Society's guidance. And in the UK, at least, we look to those guidelines as a source of high quality, reliable, evidence-based, up-to-date information. But everything you say, it's absolutely true. It's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? That you could go onto YouTube and see a video and not know if it's come from a good or a bad source. And so if you don't base the information you've got on a credible source to begin with, everything you do after that is going to be flawed as well.
Exactly. Now, you came out with a bottom line, and we have a bottom line always with the podcast. We call it the BEAM bottom line often when we're doing best evidence in emergency medicine critical reviews. But what was your bottom line? What was your take-home message? What was the end of your research project or proof of concept?
Well, I think one of the things I remember saying, we can change the world around us, and one way of doing that is social media, because it's a really powerful tool. But using that, our achievements are limited only by our imagination. And so I think that the restraints of time and money and being the little guy, it's not relevant when you've got an idea and a vision. You have to follow that through, and you have to achieve it no matter what.
I love that conclusion. It almost reminds me of, do you know Bill Nye, the science guy?
Yeah, yeah.
You could change the world. I love that guy, Bill Nye. Oh, well, congratulations. I mean, what a great accomplishment. What an important topic and issue that you've turned into a very fun project. The last few questions I have for you is, have you signed a recording contract yet?
Oh, sadly not. But who knows? We might try and make another video or two in the future.
Oh, that was my next question. Are you going to make another one of these videos?
I would love to, but I would like to do it properly. And to do it properly, I think probably I do need to go down the boring hospital route. And so it'll probably take a little bit longer, but I think the results will be worth it, because then we can prove that we're making a difference to patient care, which is ultimately what it's all about.
Absolutely. And if you do get more of these videos, will you consider taking it on a world tour and promise to stop by Canada on the world tour?
I think I could. Would I be able to stay over at your house for a couple of days?
We'd love to have you.
Okay, in that case, it's a deal.
So we always have a Keener contest in this podcast. And last week's Keener contest was Anita Ng. And she knew that there had been only one, yes, one trial for the use of heparin in the treatment of pulmonary embolism. So congratulations, Anita. And this week's question is, what is the NNT... or the NNH, we're looking for both the NNT, number needed to treat, and number needed to harm, for long-acting beta agonists with inhaled corticosteroids versus inhaled steroids alone for children with asthma. I'll give everybody a hint.
Hello, Newman.
And if you know the answer, be the first one to send it to thesgem@gmail.com, and I will send you a cool skeptical prize. Well, right now I'm doing lots of critical reviews for the best evidence in emergency medicine conferences that are coming up. And there have been some great articles published in the last year, so I look forward to presenting them at Ski Beam and Sweet Beam. But before we go, I'm going to ask our guest, Tapas, to say the SGEM tagline, if you would.
Absolutely. So, be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Thank you so much. That was brilliant. Talk to everyone next week.